Greetings. I'm James Gilliland. I'm your host, and we've got another great show. We've got all kinds of events unfolding, and we are delighted to have Neil Kramer here at the ranch. And he's put on a spectacular presentation that people are just all blown away. And afterwards, we'll probably try to get some of the people that have been in the presentation to talk about their experiences here, you know, and what they've gotten out of the presentation and just what they've gotten out of being here on the ranch and the Sky Watches and whatever else has been going on. So it's going to be quite a show. There's a lot going on right now. There's a lot of energy shifts, a lot of craziness. There's so many topics I'd like to get into as far as newsworthy topics, but I don't want to waste the time. I want to get Neil on the show right away. So, Neil, are you with us?
Yes, I am. A pleasure to be here again.
And, you know, Neil, you've got, you're an internationally known speaker, and you've got your book out, The Unfoldment, and I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to that, but I know everybody's just loving your presentation here so far.
Yeah, well, it's just been, as ever, just a great weekend and just an awesome gathering of people, and it just always is here. You know, I'm just used to it now. It's always excellent. That standard of excellence just is just so high in terms of the quality of the people who come here. So, yeah, it was a long, good day today, and we had a, you know, beautiful, beautiful sort of fresh weather and blue skies and a little rain last night, but all burned off, and lovely summer, you know, late summer's day today. So, yeah, we went through an awful lot of material, and we looked at all different kinds of origins and mystical origins, ultra-terrestrial, extraterrestrial, philosophy, psychology. So, yeah, we're all, I think right now, having a well-deserved break before another session tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, got to have some assimilation time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. A lot of the people I've been talking to, you know, that have been coming out of the talks, and they walk out of there, and you can tell they're in deep thought, you know, and reevaluating. Yeah.
Well, that's what we do, isn't it? I mean, you and I, in our own ways and together and separately, you know, we facilitate a space for people to, you know, give themselves permission to think beyond the normal boundaries. Because, you know, there's some people who do this a lot and have made the life very free, so spiritual, you know, philosophy is very close to them. But other people, you know, there's always newcomers. There's always people who've never been. There's always people who are new to this kind of work. And they just find it a very safe place, I think, to speak. And mm-hmm. as different as we all are in our different manifestations and modalities and stuff, I think we all share that we respect the path of the, you know, the modern pilgrim who comes to a spiritual gathering place. And we learn to stand back, don't we, and give them a moment to reflect, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things I've heard here quite a bit is people, one of the things they keep saying is, I can't believe I'm telling you this story, you know. and ordinarily they wouldn't have a place or an ear to listen to their story, and you know, because they are so outside the box, but there's so many different stories out there, and a lot of times when they share their story, we're going, well, that's pretty normal for up here, you know.
It is. I mean, you know, if you can't stand out in the field with James Gilliland and tell him anything, you know, what can you do? So it's one of those places where not only can we discuss, you know, high-level things and metaphysics and, you know, some of these light ships and crafts and talk about the Pleiadians and all the different energies and stuff, but we can actually, you know, apply that into life and, as is often explained, you know, people's processes, you know, accelerate and deepen. And I think it's always nice to watch people who we've known through the years, I mean, obviously particularly yourself, come here year after year after year, and, you know, you sort of track the development and they become just this huge extended family. But it's also nice to see, you know, people who have never been to something like this, and there's quite a few of them this weekend who've travelled from Europe to come here, and from the East Coast, and from Canada, and from Mexico, who've travelled to be here and share time with us, who have never, ever been to something like this, and are just wandering around with their mouths open, really. And we just, you know, we just try and accommodate them the best we can, don't we, and share our wisdom and listen to their wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what it's all about. I know in putting this ranch together, I had many opportunities to go with just one system, you might say, you know, one belief system. And we'd have donors come and, you know, if you create this as a such and such a church, you know, we'll fund everything. And but they had that box that we had to stay within.
Yeah.
And I could never do that, you know, and I had lamas and yogis and elders come here. I mean, all walks of life. And that's the way I've always created it to be, is a place where everybody could come and share and look for the similarities and talk about their experiences and their beliefs and not worry about, you know, being put on a cross or, you know, or had their heads hacked off, you know, in sharing.
Yeah, well, it is. It's very multidisciplinary, isn't it? You know, we talk about Catholicism and Christianity and Buddhism and Hinduism and Tibetan lamas and yoga and fakirs and all kinds of stuff. And we were doing a little bit of that today and really looking for the, as ever, the common threads and, you know, the origins of these things. And again, you know, particularly with them being Western, most of our visitors this weekend, a lot of them have come from Christian and Catholic and Judaic and a few Islamic backgrounds as well. And I think that that's the other thing, is that they feel that they're not going to be attacked here. Nobody's going to laugh or point the finger. That they're safe to talk about their, you know, religious traditions. Not, I mean, most of the people, frankly, have moved on from them and gone on to do other things. But they feel safe even to talk about very traditional, you know, very exoteric traditions, because they know that they're not going to be laughed at, and that's refreshing as well.
Yeah, there's so many realities going on. Somebody was asking me about that, you know, what I believed in, and I told him, well, there's always a lie in belief. So, but, you know, imagination is real on the level of imagination. So in the mental planes, who knows what's being created or manifested, and who am I to tell people what's true and what's not true?
Yeah, yeah, and that comes over again and again, which is, you know, what is real. And because of the multi-layered phenomena here, you know, oh, there we are. That's a real piece of human life. We have all these different crafts, and we have light ships, and we have beings, and we have nature spirits, all kinds of different things. And, you know, it's an illustration to say, well, there's all this phenomena going on, and there's all these different things occurring, but your proximity to it and your ability to perceive it is largely dictated by your ability to, as I have been saying today, empty your cup, you know, to just temporarily pour out all your ideas and theories and philosophies and beliefs, and just for a minute, just totally empty that cup out. And as we said, you know, like the Zen mind, beginner's mind, just to be like a totally blank slate and just see it actually for what these things are, you know, not try and determine what they are, not try and, you know, theorize about anything, just to witness them as purely as possible. And in my experience, that creates a more valuable perception, because you're not trying to edit it to say, well, it must be this, or this is this, or, well, like, oh, it's one of these, or, oh, it can't be one of these. You don't do anything, you just look. And that's the sort of skill that's undervalued these days. So we talked a little bit about that today, to try and encourage people to just see what is, not what might be or what they think might be or what they would like it to be, but what actually just is in front of your eyes. And when we do that, we classify it immediately that, you know, we're seeing unidentified things as zipping about in the grass, in the trees, on the mountain, in the skies. And we have a number of very professional and very well-educated people here who are like just saying, well, that isn't anything that fits into the mainstream paradigm. So they have a major philosophical problem. So if they're honest with themselves, they stand out in the field and say, well, I don't know. And I think that's a very fair answer. And we can present what we think, what you think, what I think, what Nate and Jana think, and share our thoughts about these things. But just to see, you know, a grown man, 60 years old, stand in that field and say, you know, guys, I have no idea what that is. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. That's the beginning of wisdom for me.
Exactly. I remember a while back we were out there together. There was a woman, I don't remember her name, but I believe she was a physicist, and she just could not wrap her heads around the orbs.
I think I know what you're talking about. I remember this one.
She thought they were just dust, and she pretty much had them all explained away until she looked through the night vision, you know, with the infrared spotlight, and then saw them flying against the wind and going into the ground and coming out of the ground and interacting with people. And and I mean, the one thing she did say is, you know what, I cannot wrap my head around this. I do not know what this was. And I go, finally, you know, like, there's a start, you know.
It is. It's very encouraging, isn't it? Because we're often drawn into, you know, persuading or trying to prove or this and that. And there comes a point, doesn't there, where you just think, look, I'm not trying to prove anything anymore. I can walk you through some evidence and some data, if you like. But it's far better if you sort of do that for yourself, but be really honest. And when you say, look, I've just reached the edges of my understanding with this, you know, say so. Don't be embarrassed about it. Just say it. Because here, again, you find a very safe audience for that sort of reaction. Nobody's going to laugh at you when you say, I have no idea what I'm experiencing. But I find it a little exhilarating or a little scary or a little unsettling because it's unknown. And, you know, for thousands of years, what's unknown to humans has been a bit eerie. So sometimes we can provide a framework for that and say, well, there's many ideas on what this is, and here's some of them, and, you know, and then we start a dialogue with that person.
Exactly. The I noticed one guy came out here, and he just had in his mind, his wife brought him out, and he was a scientist and everything, and he just goes, that's dust. That's just dust, period. And I said, well, have you looked through the night vision? And he says, no. And I said, well, you want to check out the spotlight and the night vision and see how these things act? And he goes, no. He goes, it's just dust. And he'd made his mind up. It was just dust. And so I said, okay, as you wish.
You know? Well, that's the funny thing, though, isn't it, James? Because, you know, I don't know whether you find this, but I have less and less interest in trying to prove it to people anymore.
Exactly.
I just let them get up. If you want it to be dust, or you want it to be some kind of problem with the equipment, then that's fine. If you want it to be a satellite, even though it's just fishtailed and done a right angle, fine. And if you want it to be an aeroplane, even though it's not doing any sort of linear light patterns, fine. But we know, all of us, stood around, that you're editing this out to make yourself feel better. Because if you say the truth, it does present a problem. And maybe, you know, people like yourself and I and the guys here, we haven't massively invested in the mainstream view of things, so we don't have to withdraw a big investment. But some people have, you know, they've been actively pouring in their theories and ideas and emotions and beliefs into politics and industry and science. And when you come here, all that is thrown into turmoil. So it's a real testing ground for the honesty of a person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a guy here. It was kind of hilarious, but we had this one guy here, and he was demanding, you know, that it was right at the same time we're talking about this triangle ship came over, and, you know, it made a nice turn, you know, right angle turn, and went off in another direction and turned over. And he's going, oh, that's the NOS satellite. That's a military, you know, satellite, you know, they use for looking for submarines. You know, it's a Navy satellite and this and this and this. I go, oh, well, funny you should say that, because the guy that actually worked on that project said it was a complete failure and they couldn't get it to hold position, and they brought it down and it no longer exists. And this guy's from NASA, and he showed me pictures of the satellite of exactly what it looked like and everything else when it was on the ground and they were working on it, you know? So, but this guy's where I'm an expert, I know. And I said, well, apparently the guy that actually worked on the project was just here and you know, he has a different story, you know, and the guy got pretty upset about it, you know,
it's just, you know, the more people are invested, the more upset they become. And I don't know why, but I never particularly invested in the scientific, you know, empirical facts of a thing. I always just thought, well, that's one way of looking at it, and it's very functional and it serves a purpose. But if you really go on these journeys, you know, into the mountains, into the forest, inside, out of the body, there's just such a catalogue of stuff that you see that you have to suspend belief and stop trying to figure it out. And I guess, one underestimates that when, you know, when you've been doing that for 10, 20, 30 years, you forget that you've been training yourself in this, you know, mental elasticity and this, you know, flexible attitude. And then it's always a bit of a funny shock when I come across someone who's very rigid, you know, in the thinking, very firm, and I think, oh, God, yeah, I forgot there were people like that around. You know, I've been accustomed to dealing with all these fabulous, flexible minds, and when a firm one comes along, I think, oh, goodness me, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing that, and I'm just surprised that people could actually hold on to that rigidity, you know, rigidity for so long.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you do that? That's like mastery in itself.
It is. Well, I always think it's like a comfort blanket. You know, yeah. It's like just something that they grasp hold of and think, well, this is it, baby. You know, this is the thing that I hold on to. Don't you dare take it away from me.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. It seems to be an ongoing thing, you know, happening on the planet right now. And I know the work that you're doing, it gets people to kind of reframe things and say, hey, you know, maybe I have been programmed. Maybe my whole view of the world and myself has been given to me, or it's a program that I've accepted. And maybe it's time to start looking at the fallacies of that program.
Yeah, and it is. And I think if we're doing that, and we're facilitating people who are going through that process, what's very positive about this place and this venue and the work that you do, the work that I do, the work that the guys do here, is we're pretty insistent on it being quite an inspirational and uplifting path. It's not a lot of doom and gloom. You know, we don't allow ourselves to get stuck in that. We have to look at some hard things now and again and some dark shadows, but I think at the end of the day, there's a lot more smiles and laughter here than anything else, and that speaks volumes, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was listening to a guy's story. I won't go into names or anything, but he was just really upset and crying over the phone. And, you know, they're trying to kill me, and they're you know, they've threatened me, and I don't know if I'm going to live and all this other stuff. And he's going through this whole thing. And I was thinking about that, and I thought about it. I go, let me see. I've had a couple bullets whiz by my head. I've had all kinds of death threats.
Yeah.
I've had my car sabotaged. I've had, you know, I can go on and on. Black helicopters been hit by their exotic weapons. And, you know, and I, you know, that I could be write a book in itself, you know, about that whole thing. But, you know, it's just like, why go there? You know, what purposeful good is it other than helping other people understand that what's been happening with them? But you can't dwell on that. You have to just rise above it and just find better ways of building up your own shields, you know, your own defenses.
You do, and that is very much affected by the people we've got around us. And, you know, I've said many times, you know, but the listeners who are regular will have to forgive me, but, you know, you've got such a great bunch of people here of their own volition who choose to be here, work with you, work with their own projects, work with the land, work with, you know, the energies here. It really makes a difference. And I don't want to hog this because I've got one of those great luminaries sat right next to me now. So if I may, James, I'll hand this over to Jana.
Great. And hey, thanks so much for coming on the show. And
pleasure, sir. A pleasure as always. And I'll speak to you later.
All right. And thanks for your work here on the ranch. I mean, everybody's loving it and cracking the egg here.
Good evening.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good evening, everyone in the BBS audience.
Yeah, this
is... Yeah, I guess we were going to just talk a little bit about what I was thinking about for next weekend and celebrating the land here. And I've been sitting here with Neil, and it's been lovely because in his, you know, multifaceted presentation, he's included in the sort of multidimensional presentation and experience nature spirits, and that pleases me to no end. Yeah, so when I first came here, you know, it was not totally part of my reality. It was something I think that I rejected on the fringes, and I had a background in reforestation that I don't think I realized the energy I was carrying. And when I came here, what was it, in 2009, James? you know, I had several contact experiences from the elemental kingdom, fully physical, so that I would know that this was real, because I hadn't encompassed that. I was much more distant, I guess, and I had romanticized the stars in a much deeper way, and I was more connected, I felt, cosmically. But then I was attracting nature intelligences into my life. And I remember the morning that I came to you and told you about my experience, and you just sort of laughed and said, oh, those are the nature spirits. And I looked at you and said, really? And, you know, it's been a great work that we've been participating in the last several years. And this is something that we want to celebrate, is the land here and the closeness of the spirit here and with the nature spirits.
You know, a lot of people say, well, that's all airy fairy, and it is fairy, you know.
is very fairy, and that's why I rejected it.
Yeah.
You know, I was very attracted to the mineral kingdom as a child. Yeah. You couldn't drive by a gravel pile without me kind of freaking out. So I was attracted to a lot of rock and gem stores and gemstones, and crystal healing is what I initially got into, of course. And so I went into these shops, and I see these images of these beings. It was too much for me. And what I've learned from that is that anything that you inherently reject is coming for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, this has unfolded, and, you know, I've been introduced into a greater aspect of myself that's not just about the fae, but this is also connected to the inner earth. And back to, let's talk about, how did we get disconnected from nature?
Yeah.
How did we ever come to believe that we are above nature? And how, and if we want to, how do we reconnect? And it's all very simple. And I, you know, I did my first thing last year that was a lovely gathering that produced some things I could have never expected. And a beautiful alchemy of souls that came together. And we went to some local sites, and I was able to show people some really, really sacred spaces on the land that I don't think otherwise I would be able to. And it's been a very long season, but I'm not going to be doing this presentation. It's going to be run by them. So
a beautiful thing happened. I was out in the field, and somebody was asking me, they said, are you self-sufficient here? And this beautiful woman out there corrected it, and she says, no, you're earth sufficient. And it's funny how we run this program. I did it. You know, we're self-sufficient, and we're not self-sufficient. We depend on the earth for everything. And even the body that we have came from the earth, you know, the elements. And we are not self-sufficient, and we are totally dependent on the earth, and we need to start connecting back into it and give thanks and gratitude.
And back to our bodies, and that's the gateway. And through some really simple energetic practices to realize that the body's on loan and that the body is a pure reflection of the earth, you know, it's deeply humbling, and it's very easily. But I think that the images of fae and fairy, just like they were for me, they were just a joke. Until I came to this beautiful land, you know, over 5 years ago, and worlds unfolded and unfolded, and I've just been continually humbled, and I'm so grateful. You have opened these doors for me and other people, and now I can help open those doors further.
Mm-hmm.
So the graciousness and the gratitude is really what opens the doors. And last year, when we did this and some of the exercises that we did, we had some incredible experiences and group sightings. And so I'm just really looking forward to it. But if anything, it's more just about celebrating the land, and it's by donation, you know, and sharing some good salad and some soup and doing some practices. And it's just kind of a, you know, a one-day thing that we're going to do to celebrate this land, because it's a living testament to these greater kingdoms, and also with the connection to the mountain and the inner earth.
Yeah.
I mean, there are. I'm not the only person that's going to be speaking here. We have a large dichotomy of different sort of mediums of learning towards, you know, the sovereignty movement and all of that, and that, you know. It's been a long season, but we're going to continue to open these doors, and that, you know, there's in October, Spencer and Nate are doing, oh yeah, and as well as Trinkabuddy, we're going to get together and we're going to talk about different applications of choice and the application of freedom technologies, and just to kind of ground mark that, Spencer's going to come in and talk after me here. But yeah, I just wanted to extend my heart to you and everybody that's listening, that's, you know, touched down on this land for the first time, is that I was once a stranger to this land, and that it's welcomed me greatly, and that when you put out the intent to heal or the intent to connect, it will be greeted. And there's a huge opportunity here on this land to do that. And I just want to share that with people.
Well, one thing that's a testimony to your work is the gardens that, you know, you've labored.
I wish I could have done more in the last few months. We've been so busy with everything, you know. And I like that what you used to say. People don't know what a weed is until they know what it's useful for.
What's funny is that, you know, I did a little experiment at the upper field up there, and I just threw a garden in really quick and tried to grow stuff and do more of a commercial situation just to see the difference. And I didn't really invoke the nature intelligences or a lot of the other things, and just to see what would happen. Nothing happened. I mean, it was a total failure, basically. I mean, there's some potatoes in there, and that's about it. But it's a testimony as to actually putting your heart and soul into the gardening and working with the nature intelligences, and, you know, the yield and the size of the crops the nutrients in the crops, everything is just like 100-fold compared to just trying to throw a quick commercial thing in to just grow some
winter veggies. This does come back to food, and this does come back to politics and sovereignty, because if you want to grow your own food, you're basically printing your own money. And we want to talk about heirloom seeds and some of these more radical ways that are really simple if you want to make your way into this knowledge. You know, I have a lot of practical knowledge about that too. You know, it's not all airy-fairy. I've got some really practical stuff about companion planting and all that, and just seeing what we've done here. And I guess, I mean, I haven't been out to your field so much, but that area that you're in is such a highly charged area, you know, but there has to be a participation, I guess you could say. But real sovereignty also does involve the politics around food and the vibration of, like, when you get squash from the garden zero, they're, you know, people say they glow. Then, you know, something that's traveled, you know, several miles, and a lot of people are really interested in food sovereignty. And it's not just about nature intelligences, but it's, you know, it's tenfold when it comes to how do you want to empower yourself and in how many ways and how far are you willing to go. And it's been a transformative journey for me. But yeah, the food, I guess I could say politics of the food sovereignty is a huge part of it, because we as humans want to feed each other. We want to take care of each other. For me to be able to bring in a basket of food to you guys is, you know, that it's like love made visible.
Exactly. So, you can feel it. I mean, when you eat the food, it's so empowering, you know. And then you go, you have to travel, and then you go to a fast food place, and you go, "What did I just eat?"
Yeah, I don't leave the mountain very often. I just want to share this with people. So if you want to come up next weekend on Friday or Saturday, you know, we're going to be focusing on the land, and I'm going to be, you know, opening doors for people and allowing my full elven inner earth self to come through for people to enjoy, because I'm pretty funny and I play the flute and I love you. And but speaking on sovereignty, I'm going to pass this over to my dear brother, Spencer.
I got your flute up here.
Yeah, we've got lots of stories to share too. So I'm looking forward to celebrating this land and everything that it holds, because I feel that we are building like a mystery school here. And I'm really happy to have Kramer here and all these, you know, fellow seekers and fellow beers here on the land. And, you know, the law application and, you know, stepping into our power around some of the, you know, the paperwork and the 3D stuff is amazing, but it's all encompassing. So I'm going to pass this off to my brother Spencer, and I want to thank you all.
Yeah, people can go ahead and just connect with eSETI reservations at gmail.com if they want to find out more about the event, or go to the website calls.
That's a good idea. Okay, here's Spencer. Take care, guys.
All right.
James.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Welcome back on the show.
Hey, thanks. Hey, nice little segue. You know, I was kind of wondering what the opening would be on. How do you break the ice on some of what's going to be presented in the first weekend in October? And some of those elements of victimless crimes that the civil system oppresses, I kind of forget about the pressure over in the food and you know, collecting rainwater is illegal in a lot of claim jurisdictions and things like that, and it's all the same simple system that keeps people from being able to exercise their own freedom.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, I've got a great segue for you going into this one. We're talking about how, you know, how is this system going to change? And and I was talking about the top down, you know, coming from the top down, what's happening on the higher levels that that's happening in the unseen, and everything on this level owes itself to a higher dimension or a higher expression, you might say. And so the higher dimensions are all pressing in, and they have their councils and their groups, and they're making decisions, and that's changing things here on the earth. And what we're working with is the more of the implementation of it, you know, on this level, and you know, changing the rules and the disempowering rules and regulations and just clarifying them, and that's what, you know, your work does, is just bring in real clarity to the stunts that they're pulling and why it's not legal what they're doing, and they really don't have any jurisdiction or authority to do a lot of things that they are doing.
They don't, or if it's there, it's pretty thin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple of things I think that prevent people from looking into this, and one is I think there's a general understanding that's projected, and it's false, that dealing in legal issues is daunting and difficult, and it's not even approachable, and it's not. It's not. And the other, I think, that prevents people is that they just don't see it in the first place. They don't see the leashes that are on them because they're too desensitized to it.
Yeah, it's a program that they've been raised under, and they don't know any other way of looking at things until it gets so oppressive they have to stand up and learn alternative ways, you know, to break out of
it.
Yeah. And that's where we're at right now. You know, we're seeing, you know, a pretty totalitarian state coming forward here, and that believes that they have the right to do what they're doing, and they really don't have, you know, any mandate. I mean, even TSA has no mandate to do what they're doing.
Yeah, it's all private.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think on that weekend, it's not just going to be me, Trent Goodbody, and some other folks that Nate has organized to pitch in on this. Will be contributing to, and I think what I'll do is I'll start with something concrete and tangible, and I'd like to do mortgages and the debt associated, and then how the civil system attaches to it, you know, the regulations around a house, the code and that kind of thing, as a place to start and scratch the surface. And I think a lot of people need remedy there. There's, you know, so many people getting foreclosed on and kicked out of their homes. And it's been my experience that what the system does to do that is to harvest people's consent. In other words, they never had legal grounds to do it. They kick people out of their house because they failed to object correctly. And it's a pretty dirty trick. And that I have yet to see an exception to that example. So, you know, lots of people that are getting kicked out of their houses, and the solutions are very approachable and simple and that kind of thing. And it's a way to see the pattern. You know, it's fractal. So whatever you see there, you'll see over in whatever the issues are with, you know, if someone were to get cited for collecting rainwater or selling or producing raw milk, or, you know, those examples are probably endless.
Yeah, exactly. The one of the things that I'd love to get your insights on is this debt forgiveness that all these other groups are talking about, where, you know, they've you know, we have this national debt that's just off the scale, and there's no way we can get out from under it, and it's not sustainable, and it is going to end up in total collapse. And the only way out is debt forgiveness. Mm-hmm. To keep this society going and functioning. But there's all this talk about how the debt forgiveness has been orchestrated on the highest levels, you know, to the Queen and the Pope and the highest, you know, the banksters or whatever. Yeah. And I was wondering if you have any insights into that, maybe to talk a little bit about that.
I doubt it'll shock you, but it might surprise even you. One is one of the ways the civil system works, and all the national debt is currency always returns to source. And so electricity gets grounded. And those national debt is owed to the people of the countries. And, mm-hmm. and people don't realize that. And so that debt isn't as catastrophic as people envision. If that money was returned to who it's actually owed to, it would go to the people. It would go to the people.
Yeah.
So that's one of the tricks to the system. And so on another plane, that debt could be handled another way. And I think this is how Iceland handled it, is when they were faced with a national debt at the national level, what they said to the central banks that they allegedly owed it to was, hey, we see the accounting here. If you could show us that you lost property, we'll pay it, no problem. And so what they didn't argue and they didn't dispute the debt, they shifted the burden over to the alleged creditor and said, if you could show us that we owe property and that you lost it, both of those have to happen. And the banksters couldn't show that, because currency is always digital and there's no substance to it. And so the creditors had to walk away, and they did. And you will be hard-pressed to find that on the Internet, but it's there. Mm-hmm. That debt was forgiven, and that's how they did that with those mortgages over there. And so I think that's fantastic that some of those smaller nations are starting that, so that it's not too chaotic when some of the debt gets straightened out. But that's another way that's happening, and I think that might be more along the lines of what you're talking about.
Yeah, and there's a huge censorship.
That's how the debt being forgiven is. It's not legit in the first place.
Yeah, and there's a massive censorship about what happened in Iceland. They don't want people to know, you know, what happened, and they pretty much just, you know, packed up the banksters, kicked them out, and said, we're done, and we're going to take over our own treasury and do our own thing, and now they're just flourishing.
They sure are, and they sure did. And even more to that, some of those, there's quotes from Iceland officials that said, over here, we penalize criminals. And in America, they're rewarded. And they were talking about, you know, the Wall Street kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I specifically looked on MSN's website with some search techniques. And MSN absolutely brought up zero results. And so there might be other search engines, but I thought that was fairly interesting that MSN, they don't just, you know, put it on the back burner. I couldn't find it anywhere. You know, and I could through Google and some other non-news sites, but, that was fairly heavily repressed.
Yeah, we're having that experience here where there's some major repression on our newsletter and some other things. I'm getting just overloaded with emails from people saying, we're having the same problems, and our links aren't working. We're totally being censored. What is going on? And so it does seem to be there's a major effort now to break links, or you know make YouTube links so they won't work, or you know, mess up your postings, or you know, it's just amazing how scrambled everything is getting. And, you know, I think it's our alphabet agencies that are in there, you know, with their little computer system messing everything else up too.
Sure. Yep. You know, and this might be too much to bite off right now, but at some point, I'd like your take on, I wonder if too much information got out to the people too fast, that might be as chaotic and problematic, maybe, as not enough info. I bet there's a case that could be just right. You know, maybe this format is an example of these are people that can get their mind around what's being said and they're ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I've heard different takes on that where they said some people just aren't ready for this information. They're so locked into being sheep that they're going to be sheep. You know, they're born sheep and they've been living as sheep and they're going to die as sheep because they don't want to look at anything. They're too afraid to stand tall and stand up for their rights and take a good look at what they're participating in. And, you know, they just do not want in any way whatsoever to change or look at it. And they're so programmed and insecure that they, you know, they believe their whole security system is based on perpetuating these myths and being a part of this enslaving dynasty that's going on. But there is no security in that, you know, because there's a little thing called karma, you know, and what goes around comes around. And so if you're a willing participant in a system that's enslaving people and creating manufactured lack and oppressing people and things like that, well, you know, there's no way around it. There's a karmic backlash coming, and that's going to be their biggest insecurity.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody can handle the truth. They're just not going to like the change.
Yeah, exactly. They say people fear two things, change and the unknown. Those are the things people fear the most. And I think it's funny because my whole life I pretty much represented, you know, the unknown and,
uh-huh,
you know,
both of those,
change. Yeah, so it's, I've dealt with that quite a few years now and observed that. And you know, it's interesting, but, you know, it's not going to be business as usual because the whole universe is not supporting this network anymore.
Yeah. Hey, James, you know, I don't want to hog the whole airtime. We have Sean at home here waiting as well to talk to you.
Okay, well, let's put on the next guest.
Yeah, maybe you guys can work out a little introduction and I'll just hand it right over to her.
Okay, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, James, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. We were having a very short discussion outside earlier about black helicopters and whatnot, and then you had to run and do your show. So I'll just give a quick introduction for myself. I am author of the book Love and Spirit Medicine, which was just published early this summer. And the book chronicles my monthly shamanic immersions into the sacred mushroom medicine. Mm-hmm. And so I'm from the Seattle area, and I am an author and a teacher and a spellbreaker, I call myself. And I work very closely with this medicine, and it's very interesting that you guys have been talking about sovereignty, because I have been exploring this a little bit myself, just really beginning in the past couple of months. Because, of course, these medicines are illegal, and to me there's a big difference between a plant medicine and a drug, a very dangerous drug. And so plant medicine I consider a medicine of consciousness, and so why would something like that be made illegal, and why would so many very good people be incarcerated for, you know, working with a plant? So anyway, just thought that was very interesting that you guys would be discussing that, and also the food sovereignty as well, which is a subject that is near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we could go in any number of directions, and then there's the black helicopters. So where do you want to start?
we've just got a few minutes, but I'd love to hear about the black helicopter story, only because I've been hearing just incredible stories about people in Seattle and Portland area that have been completely harassed, and other areas as well, by these black helicopters. And it's usually when they're going through a major awakening and they're having contact with the higher dimensional beings. And the next thing you know, these helicopters show up and just hit them with some kind of psychotropic or psychotronic energy and, you know, scramble their fields and really push them down for a little while. And sometimes there's physical things that happen where they get very sick and ill and they have these skin lesions break out. And it's all totally related to these black helicopters, which are, you know, attached to our own Air Force or whatever force is out there, you know, the black projects or whatever. And they're actually making war on their own people, which I think is beyond ridiculous. I mean, how could you be a part of any of these institutions that are, their logo is to protect and serve, you know, or to protect the Constitution and the rights and the people and things like that. And then they're out there flying these helicopters, attacking people that are doing nothing more than waking up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, I mean, I'd always heard stories of these black helicopters and until you actually experience it for yourself, it's quite something, I must say. And probably now, about 2.5 years ago, I saw my first one, and that was when we had a group of people over to my house and we were doing ceremony outside and we were opening the directions, and a black helicopter was hovering over the chicken yard area of my house. So that was my first experience. And I remember looking up and going, wait a minute, these things are really real, A, and then B, what the hell is this thing doing above the chicken yard? You know, like it was clearly observing us, and it stayed there until we went inside. So now fast forward to last summer of 2012, I had been working with the mushroom every month, large doses, again, very reverently, very shamanically, and what was happening to me was I was being animated by what I call beings. I don't call them so much spirits, because just as we are human beings, these are beings as well, right? Just extra dimensional beings. But they would come in and animate me. And on the Venus transit last year, June 5th, I knew that was a portal. I remember saying, I really feel like we should be having rituals in Giant Stadium. Like it just felt really big to me, you know? And so I said, I'm going to go in. I'm going to go through this portal. And so I called a dear friend who was like a fellow psychonaut, and we went in through the medicine, and that was when I experienced a rush of energy, and these beings that I call star beings came through me, and they announced themselves by saying they've got their guns pointed and their radar on, and yet here we are in a tiny tent in Redmond. And then I turned to my friend, and they said, waste of money, don't you think? And they proceeded for the next 3 hours to kind of educate us and talk to us and make us laugh. They were full of mirth. And when we got, when that passed, I remember just exclaiming, my God, those were star beings. I didn't even know I could bring them through. And a couple days later, we drove to Ashland, Oregon to work with a group of priestesses with a teacher who was made a scholarly study of the ancient Greek priestesshoods. And I had a number of aha experiences there, and it came to me that I needed to bring the plant medicine, which I did. And I ended up going in as medicine oracle for these women that night. And I cracked it wide open. And a being came through. It took 90 minutes for it to come through. And anyway, to make a long story as short as possible, this being proceeded to speak with the group for the next, again, like 3 hours. Very high-frequency being. So high-frequency, in fact, that I woke up the next day still cracked open, and these beings, it was a group of them, were saying to me, it will take 6 days to integrate this, you know. And a week and a half later, I was awakened at 11:45 p.m. on a Wednesday night in Redmond, Washington, of all places, by helicopters directly over my roof. The sound was deafening, and I leapt out of bed and ran to the front door and was too afraid to go outside, and you could hear them, and then they very slowly moved off. And you're really the first person who's I've really spoken to about this, in terms of like I knew something had been done. I could feel it. And up to that point, these beings had been, it was just a short time, of course, but had been waking me up early in the morning, full of mirth. You know, my head would still be on the pillow, and they were saying, and I would be laughing, and they would say, how many people on your planet wake up like this every morning, you know? And I would say, I think they would think you're certifiable if you did so. But they were delightful. And what I have suspected just personally is that I became a stargate over the Venus transit, and then a couple days later, and my sense is I was emanating, well, I clearly was, a very, very different frequency from my own. And so my sense was these guys came in to investigate. But again, it's not a story I share with a lot of people. Here I am now on your show sharing this, but because I feel like most people will think I'm absolutely out of my skull, but I can assure you that this happened. It was quite traumatizing.
Well, thanks for sharing. I mean, we're pretty much out of time. I wanted to play this one song on the way out. But, thank you for sharing. I know your story is going to help a lot of people who are having the same experience, understand the experience and know what's going on. And you know, it's all about knowledge is power and realize that some of the things that are happening to you are happening to you, and they are being coming from these other agencies that are at play.
Yes, but clearly there's at least two sides. I think probably more. But there's some pretty nice ones out there, which are definitely the ones that I keyed into. So
exactly,
that's the good news. Anyway, thank you very much, James.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, bye.
The good news is that there's another group coming in right now that I wanted to talk about. And the story we're hearing about the Anunnaki is 450,000 years old. I mean, it's a very old story. And at one time, there was a Supreme Council, and they're very noble, very benevolent, and they worked under universal law. And they're the ones that built the ancient temples that were here. And they did some genetic experimenting, and they took a knuckle dragger and Neanderthal man and added their genetics to them created a group. They created another group of people to assist them because their planet was dying basically, and they had to restore their environment and with the gold dust. And they also ingested the gold dust too as well. There's other reasons, but anyway, there's a whole nother story to this. And what's nice is the benevolent ones are returning, and they left some of their own behind, you know, which were around these massive temples that they built to oversee, who fell, and they call them the fallen ones. And that's where we get the stories of a lot of the fallen angels and things like that. And that's this group that fell, that was left behind, and they got caught up in the earth scenarios and the dramas and, you know, the first three chakras are survival, sex, and power. And they just fell, you know, and they saw the daughters of man to be fair and took them as wives. And there's a big story. It's a long story about it. But what happened was one of these benevolent beings came to me, and I was sitting in the presence of two lovely people from Australia. And it's Dale and Andrea, and they have a wonderful band called Outback Gypsies. And if you want to see their music, you can go to outbackgypsy.com.au. And so this music came through me, and it came through very fast. And I don't know, I've never written a song before, and I just wrote down the words, and they put the music to it and played it to the people at the Kapacha Festival, and everybody was crying, you know, because of the energy that came through with this song. So this is like an eighth dimensional energy download that came through in this song, and I want to play it on the way out. So I'm going to go and play this song and check out. So thanks for listening, everybody, and stay tuned and listen to this song and really feel the words and feel the information coming through and see how it triggers your soul and how you feel about it. So without any further ado, here's the Outback Gypsies playing Anunnaki Return.
Built your ancient temples. You came to right or wrong. We left our children to oversee the civilization at its dawn. Our children, they have fallen. got to noble virtue. They were left here to serve our seeds we left behind. Like they, those who serve them have fallen just as well. Yet now it is time to awaken. Divinity standing tall. Slaves, we're not yours. We were meant to walk as one. Now we have returned when all is said and done. Tyrant's days are over. Separation, greed, and control. It is time to lead yourself from your own heart and soul.
Standing tall.
We are here to mine the hearts for everlasting gold.